Hello again, back-to-back podcast episodes. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador. And this is going to be part two of the podcast specifically for my clients on things that they can do when they take their dog home from training after it has been through the basics, as described in the prior podcast, and also has gone through the woe breaking stuff for the pointing labs, not for if it's not a pointing one, then obviously not that. And then the handling stuff, both the yard work and the swim by work. So what do you do when you take your dog home? So generally, and I don't know if for people that aren't my clients, there really is sort of a progression in dog training. And I know a lot of people, they get little puppies and they're already got them set down and they got them handling and they got them sitting on whistles and all kinds of stuff. Sometimes there's a little bit of a cart before the horse thing. And if you look at all the long-standing programs that have been out there and people that have done this for a long time and with a variety of dogs, there is a logical sequence through which you take a dog so that when you are done, you have all of the tools clearly understood and present to have a dog handle on land and water and also to the best of the dog's ability, capable of doing multiple retrieves. And there's all kind of trick stuff you can do with that. But we're talking about right now just being able to work with the tools that you have. So there's much that you can do with the tools after you know how to use all of them and understand what your dog understands. There's much to do, but that is not what this is about. And no matter how brilliant we all think we are, to just jump in to doing stuff before you have a thorough understanding of the tools is a mistake. So anyone that takes a dog home from me or in any other, you know, good training program, the first thing that you want to do, no matter, you know, I don't care if they have all this stuff on them. The first thing that you want to do is make sure that you as the dog handler understands what your dog understands. That's really important. You need to understand what they know and what they think about it. And what they're accustomed to and what standards they've been taught. So you have this big learning curve here. And that's how you need to approach this. Okay, I need to understand the tools that are on this dog. So given that the dog has been obviously force-fetched, collar conditioned, understands retrieving, understands that sit means sit, not wriggle around, but sit means sit, and that they, you know, come back, deliver to hand, and do all that whatever upland stuff when you do that, right? So then you get all of that on a dog. And I will say, folks, you don't, so everyone out there, that, these are not my clients, that hears this, that thinks a remote sit is your key to stuff, no dog coming out of here ever is taught to sit before they're, well, taught to sit on a whistle or sit away from me until I have the go really under control. And when I have the go really under control, then I come in and get the sit, and that's not very hard. So a lot of what you may have done in the past or what you see sometimes where people really, they get one horse in front of the cart and one behind, and then they get a cart over at the side, and they get a lot of things going on that don't always make sense to the dog. So you need to understand what your dog knows. So after force fetch, collar conditioning, and all the fundamental stuff that you need to have a dog that can go do, can go hunting with you and be under control, waterfowl or upland. And then you have a dog that in competitive stuff can certainly go do a junior hunter or a started or a certified level of competition. Okay, that's what you get when you have the basics. Now, after that, what we're going to introduce basically is handling. Now, for me, I'm not, remember, I don't do the right, wrong thing. I'm just saying for me, I might do hand-thrown doubles that are completely separate with dogs because to see if they can and to challenge them and stuff. But I don't do doubles with dogs really until they can handle. And the reason, the reason for that is everybody wants to jump into doubles for some reason. You know, can your dog count to two? But the problem, if you have a dog that does not handle, then when they running out towards a memory bird and go, ah, oh, never mind that, I got one over there, and start running back to the first bird that they picked up, what are you going to do? If they handle, tweet, you handle them right back where they need to go. If you don't have handling, then you got to yell at them or have your gunner yell at them, it gets all confusing. So for that reason, I don't start training doubles for competition or difficult doubles for anything until I have the tools to make sure that I get what I need out of that activity. So dogs are going to do screwball stuff. You send them on the last bird down and they head out and they go, no, I'd really rather go get the other one. You know, and you can't let them make choices, because if you let them make choices, then they're going to make choices. And sometimes you're not going to want that. So it's much easier on a dog if you just say, all right, I'll tell you how this is going to work. And then you just do it. And they don't get to opt in and opt out of various things. It just creates a lot of problems. So my dogs are not used to that. If I have them pointed at the bird right over to the right, that's where they need to go. And when I want them to go to the one on the left, we'll be pointed that way, and that's where they'll go. So that's what they're used to. So the handling thing is what allows you to do multiples and to teach difficult multiples, because you're going to have to handle when they get lost or, you know, forget or opt out or whatever it is. So the handling is the most important thing. And then when they are taught to handle you develop the tools for handling by doing the double T work that was developed by Rex Carr a long time ago. It's the double T work that starts with pile work, right? And so that's what mine have gone through. They force fetched, and then they do walking fetch, and then we do a pile, and then they go to a pile to the right and the left, and then they go to a pile behind them, so we got some three-handed casting to the side or back, and then we began to have our back pile and get them to go, and then we force them. If they have a good force fetch, that's not too hard. Basically, now we use pressure regardless of how gung-ho they are. We teach them that when you hear the word back, right, you have to go. Just like when you hear the word sit, you have to sit. I mean, in close up on basic stuff. And so now the next thing we're going to do is on this thing. When I tell you back and there's that pile back there and you know where it is, you have to go. I don't care. The thing about how fast are they going? They need to give me a good sense of urgency and get to that back pile. And for some, that's Mach 2. And for others, it's going to be a lope. And I have not obsessed with the speed of anything. Just give me your sense of urgency, whatever that is. Didn't say fear. Just like when I say back and they go, oh, I got to go. And then they get over there. Now, if they lollygaggling, then I haven't forced them enough. But the speed isn't the big deal. So they have been taught that when I say back, you go. And then after you teach that, then you come in with the rope, and they've been taught to stop on no sit whistle. First with the rope, and then it's replaced with the collar pressure. And so they learn, I got to go unless I hear the whistle, sit whistle. And then I got to stop. And it's a good, sharp whistle. And the loudness of the whistle is proportional to the distance the dog is from you. So if you're stopping the dog 30 feet in front of you, that's a quiet whistle. You wouldn't scream sit if they were right up next to you. So don't scream with the whistle, right? They're hearing. They're hearing. I see people just beller with that whistle real up close. And what that is they're just begging, please stop. So if your dog's been trained to stop, they're going to stop. Have a nice quiet whistle in close. And then you're going to have to up the decibel level if they're 200 yards out there. So just be aware that the sound of your whistle is important. But anyway, so they've been taught to go and they've been taught to stop. And so you do that on the double T, and then you stop, and you might cast them to an overpile on one side or the other. Now, for dogs I've trained, listen to this part, because I have overpiles, because on the T there's overpiles, does not mean that's how you run a blind. But it means the purpose of those are, I'm going to now stop you and change your direction. And you're going to know, you're going to see where it is you need to go. But they're over there because it's a clear and obvious change in direction. Not because that's how we're going to run blinds later on. So we're not going to send them way out and give them a big over to the blind. Not going to do that. I don't care if you're never going to compete in your hunting. Don't you lie to the dog. But you're not lying on the double T. Because they see where the piles are. They know where they are. They are being taught that you go all the way to that back pile that I pointed yet, unless I tweet and I stop you and I change your direction. I need you to change your direction. So that's what the purpose of the T is. And if you get into problems, you can, sip problems and stuff like that. You can go back to that. But that's what the purpose of that is. But that is not how you run blinds. So it's important. So normally when dogs leave here, I don't want you to go run the double T, especially if you don't know what that is, which most people do not. So that's not it. When they leave, they should have that part. What I usually have people do when they leave here where the dog is, get yourself some pattern blinds. And I've thoroughly outlined that in the book. Get yourself some blinds if it's a dog that's still not just dead nuts on good with cold blinds. A pattern blind is a blind where they know where it is and they run it and it doesn't change. We don't do new pattern blinds. I have one set of pattern blinds on my place, three big ones, well, short, medium, and long. And so that's where every dog, we come off the tee and we go over to the pattern blinds. And these are not straight. They are angly. They go over logs. They go through stuff, right? So now I have some blind retrievers. There's no overs off of this deal. Right? And you teach them to go not to the back pile of the double T, but you teach them to go. And you always use those. And in the beginning, you have to teach it to them. And I have done that with dogs that are here, so they know how to run my pattern blinds. If you still need to do that to work on them or to get yourself up to speed with this dog, then you have to walk out with the dog and make sure and teach them where these things are. Right? Walk them out, throw 2-3 bumpers to this one, back up, send them all the way back to wherever your starting line is going to be. And then do it for the next one and the next one. Have at least three. You can have more than that. You just don't want them. You want them distinctly different. Not 180 degrees apart, but distinctly different. They can all be, they can be 30 degrees apart or 45 degrees apart, depending on what your terrain is. But you go and you run those same things, varying distances, hopefully something to them, not in the baseball field, right? It's not a pattern blind. That's a lining drill because there's nothing to it other than where's the bumper. So if you can, you get these things going. Then you can go put some bumpers out, once the dog knows where they are, and then you go run these pattern blinds and you are teaching, you and your dog are connecting here. So they know where they are, they'll run all the way straight through. So now let's handle a little bit. Go ahead and run them through on the first one, on the second one, handle them three times. And they have to take the correct cast. If they're not taking the correct cast, that is, all right, if your right hand's up, they turn to your right. If your left hand goes up, they turn to your left, which would be their right. And stop them. And get where they understand you. Blowing the whistle, boom, that means to stop. You cannot allow them to develop a slow stop here. Okay, you have to have the same standards that the dog was taught with. And that is tweet, boom. Just like when they hit the end of the rope first time they heard the whistle, tweet. And their head stayed there and the bottom swung around with momentum and they were sitting down very rapidly. Right? It needs to be a rapid sit. Because and it can't be a big looping sit. It needs to be tweet, sit. So here's a good place if your dog is getting enforced the sit. Right? So if the dog does a slow sit for you, let's say you do have set up some pattern blinds, right? And you send them on back. Hand is not in front of their face, so they have to look. Their eyes are, your hand is between their eyes. It's more of a presence over the top. It is not in their vision at all. Hand down. They can't go when the hand goes down. Put your hand down. Say sit. All right? So, In other words, make sure that this dog knows that you're going to line them up, pointing them exactly where they're going to go. You're going to say dead bird. That's what they're used to hear. I say dead. Put my hand down. They cannot go. So if you have a problem with that, don't watch them take off and go, oh, darn. All right. If you know that's going to happen, put your hand down and say sit. And if you have to enforce sit or have a little tab on them, if they're all excited about going or just really want to rip out of there, okay, make sure right here, don't let the standards drop. They have to sit, hand down. I say sit again. Back, don't wait forever either, because if you're not sending them when they're looking where you want to go, that means where they're looking isn't right. So make sure that when it's clicked in and they're looking out there, then send them. Again, one of the biggest problems people have is they keep their hand down and they're like, oh, and they're nervous and they're not sure. And the dog is looking out where it's supposed to go. And then it's going, oh, that must not be it, or they would have sent me. So then they look this way. Now their head's all over the place. And and people are, they just creating this problem. When the dog, when you hit that sweet spot and the dog's looking, that's where you send them. You've got to learn that. You can practice that on lining drills and learn how to get that. Now, so that has to be good. And then when you blow that sit whistle, they have to turn around and sit. If you let them learn to sit slowly because you're kind of afraid of all this, then you're going to teach them, yes, just sit wherever. Do a big loop. Get over there. Sniff that while you're there. Sit down. You can't do that, all right? Sit. So if they do a slow sit on you, you don't do anything right. They've just told you when you send them and they go out there and then you blow the sit whistle and they kind of like half turn around, you know, they just sort of stand there looking at you like, what? Okay. So if they do that or they sit slowly, then what? Okay. If they don't sit, you've got it right there. You've got to give the sit whistle again and use the electricity to enforce sit, Nick, at whatever level has them go, oh, okay, I'll sit. So if they do sit, but they just sat a little slowly, you don't get them right there because the crime's already committed. Like, people really need to understand, oh, look, a slow sit. And then they let them have it. Do not do that. So if the dog said, oh, I'm not taking this too serious, but they did sit, right? Cast them again. Let them go a little bit. That's an enforce a sit this time right off. Tweet Nick. Let's show them. You must have a quick sit. And you need to address this immediately if this has become a problem with you. Just don't let it. Make sure that you let them know. So be ready. That's the biggest thing I see. You know, you get this trained dog home and it's like, they're supposed to do everything just perfect, right? I paid all this money. And you know, no, it doesn't work like that. Because when they were here with me, then they had a very clear understanding what the expectations are and how I would enforce and what would happen. And so we had a real good understanding. So when they go with you, now they're going, okay, this is different. And that's just what they do. They're not going, I'm going to test you and find. They don't do that. They're just going, this is different. So they're waiting to hear from you. Okay, what's the expectation? What is it you want out of this stuff? And so you have to show them and be consistent about it, and then they will. So they're not evil. They're just reflecting you. And if you're just expecting them to do good stuff and they're going, well, it seems kind of relaxed. And so they start relaxing. Okay, then you're going to have to be, you're going to have to get after yourself, because you've got to go in there knowing that they're going to just find out. So is this same different? What is this over here? I don't know. So the pattern blinds are the place where you get this good communication. All right, do not send them on the left blind, stop them halfway, and then cast them over to the right one. Don't do that. Okay, I'm not going to tell everybody else in the world not to do that, but if I train the dog, don't do it. Because when I have them face the direction and I put my hand down, that is where they're going. They can rely on that 100% of the time. If I send them somewhere and they go, wait, change my mind. Now I want you, okay, you do that on the double T, but I explained that. You do that to teach them to change their direction. But you don't do a bunch of it, all right? It's a place where you teach them. Pattern blinds, now we're going to run. We're going to teach them to go where I point you, stop when I tell you, go again when I do stuff. Don't send them somewhere else, because then they don't know. When you point them somewhere, it's like, I don't know. I don't know. Am I going to go? Are we going to be somewhere else? Just don't set that up. Have them have complete faith in you. That's really nice when you're in the last series of the Master, and it's a hard sucker. And you need to get that little toenail-y thing down the side there. When you put your hand down, they go, okay, boss, I know what you want. That's why you do that. So don't change direction. You can stop them, bring them back every now and then, 10 feet, cast them back again, just to make sure you have control. But don't do a bunch of crazy stuff. So once you get the pattern blinds where you feel comfortable handling, then let's go over, if they're ready, and do some cold blinds. Now, if you have a dog that's like already a senior hunter and doing all this stuff and you're taking it home or above, master hunter, grandmaster stuff, all right, they know cold blinds already. But if you're not comfortable running a dog, that pattern blind thing might be very helpful to you for a little bit. Now, those are blinds that they know that you can run repeatedly. So it needs to be somewhere, a field somewhere, an open space thing somewhere, someplace where you can get it where you know for the next weeks or so, you're going to be able to use this stuff. You're not going to have it, you don't need it for months and months, but for, you know, for anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks, you might need that to get kind of comfortable with this stuff. You can't not do that. So it's much better, sight blinds, you know, Lardy has his names for them. Things where they know where they're going, where you can teach them and enforce stuff. And you don't want to be addressing a slow sit and that they don't take left casts and they're doing cold blinds. You don't want to do all that at once. It's just way easier not to. So use your pattern blinds, get the going on the back, the stopping on the whistle, the casting again, get all that stuff and get where you're comfortable with it. Besides, that's a good place then later, you know, where you can throw a mark or and run a blind, you know, or throw a double and run a blind. That's where you teach under the arc blinds and poison bird blinds and all kind of advanced stuff you can do. But it helps if that dog has a lot of confidence and a lot of whatever momentum they have. You know, they're going, I love this stuff. All my dogs always just love running that because they know where they're going and it really is a momentum developer. So that's a really key thing to get you up to the speed and you and that dog definitely hooked together. On the cold blind side of that, okay, you need to be able to have where you guys can run your pattern blinds, whether you stop them, don't stop them at all, stop them 12 times on one and not at all on the other two. You have where you can... You got that stuff. Then it's time for cold blinds. And cold blinds, again, if you got a young dog that's fairly new out of this, you can start cold blinds by you and the dog walking out someplace, not where your pattern blinds are, because we got a lot of memory there. So go out to someplace else, take 3 bumpers. Don't do one, guys. Always do at least 3 or more. 6 is even okay. But walk out there with your dog and let him see you toss a bumper somewhere. Walk clearly away from that, not where they're close, and throw another one. And I don't know, depending on their learning ability, maybe 2's enough the first time. If they're good, a 3rd. Then go back and go send them on those. Now he knows there's bumpers out there. They know there's a bumper out there. They're not sure where it is. They know they have to go and they know they have to stop. So now you're going to be teaching this thing of, okay, you don't really know where it is, and I still want you to go and stop and take my casts. And this can be, depending on how far along your dog is, you know, if he's done a lot of blinds, this thing can be very hard. And if he's done a lot of blinds, you don't have to do this. If they haven't done cold blinds before, then this is how you start that. So, and you know, I'm telling you, dogs don't know what they're supposed to do. They don't have the should thing that we all do. So maybe they'll do perfect. Maybe they'll run right to all of them. Or maybe they'll run right to the first one and then want to go back there 2 more times. So now you're trying to get them. That's why you want these things spaced out pretty far in the beginning. So they have to, and if they no-go you, as with all no-goes, and I have all this written down, that is if they put your hand down and say back and they don't go, don't keep saying back. If you've been with me, you know that. If for any reason it's a cold blind and they're just confused enough, they don't go. That would be a heel. Walk forward 3 feet while you say heel, holding the continuous button down on a reasonable setting, not super high. In other words, we're forcing movement on heel. heel, burn, walk forward 3 feet, tell them to sit, put your hand down, tell them back, right? That's what you do. You don't just keep saying back and flinging your arm. Do not do that. If they just were confused or something, and I'm sorry, there's a consequence for not going. Because in competition, you are out if you have a dog that doesn't go when sent. So, and you just can't let it happen. So be ready in case on your first cold blind you start doing, they get confused. And just you put your hand down and say back, say heel, walk forward, holding the button down 3-4 feet, put your hand down, send them, they'll go. That doesn't work with just any old dog. They have to have been forced well so that they know what that movement pressure is for. You don't give them pressure standing still. You do not burn them on back sitting there. Don't ever, ever do that. You should have your dog and your electric collar taken away if you do that. If they don't go, you move forward with pressure, forcing movement, and then they'll go. Same thing, they've got to stop. They've got to stop when you blow the sit whistle. If you tweet and they don't do anything, tweet again. Enforce sit at whatever level makes them go, okay, I'll sit. So they may have that or they may not. Just be ready. And then now you've been working so much on left and right casting, right? And you throw up your right hand and they turn left. Sometimes that's because they're just like going, I don't really know what I'm doing out here. So if they take the wrong cast, stop them. Wait it out. Use your body. Move a little bit. Try and get the correct cast. You might use, not in the beginning. In the beginning, take what you get and see how this dog is. Later on, when you know the dog, you know, you're running cold blinds and the dog knows how to do it, and you give them a cast with your right hand and they turn left, that's a tweet nick. You put indirect pressure on sit. If they made a mistake, let's don't do pressure. If you throw up your right hand and they turn to the left and you stop them and you give them a bigger right cast and they still go left, that's a tweet nick. You've told them twice, I want you to go this way, and they said, no, I'm going the other way. All right? That's where that's how you correct dogs that are just not taking the cast you want is a little indirect pressure on sit. Calm. Use your body. Move a little bit. The further they are from you, the harder you are to see. So then you may have to incorporate some movement when you give casts. Now, you should also be doing lining and casting drills. In, you know, wherever you do that kind of yard work, so that they're very comfortable with your casts and right and left. Give all your casts in the same plane as your body. No forward casts, no bend. Don't bend down. Do not bend down. When you bend down to give those coming casts that people do, you're becoming less and less and less visible. Also, don't give a come in with that little soft, pleading whistle. So you stand up straight the entire time, maximum visibility. All casts are in the plane of your body. Straight up, whatever cast you give, if you give a cast that's a little 10 degrees with your right hand from the top, ideally what we want to teach them is you go about 10 degrees based on terrain and wind affect that. You've got to learn how your dog. Sometimes you give a whole different cast than you think if you're casting them with the wind or into the wind, okay? So you have to figure that stuff out. They are not a etch-a-sketch. They are not. They cannot. You throw it 10 degrees, they should take 10 degrees. It depends on the wind and the terrain and some other stuff I don't know. You have to learn your dog and then learn what kind of cast you need to give to get them where you want. Because there's a lot of factors and the casts change. But if you're casting them clearly over to the right and they are clearly, say they're going to go to the left, then the pressure you have is tweet nick, wait, and then get them to at least give you motion in the correct direction. You cannot correct if you give a 20 degree to the right cast and they take 45 degrees. You do not correct for that. You correct only for something that you can be positive. Positive is clearly them not taking the cast you want, which is I sit over to the right and you're going to the left. Outside of that, no pressure. Spend time. Do not let them take wrong casts over and over and over again. Now, if they're doing cold blinds, then this should be where you guys just get together. You should have a fairly narrow channel. Again, do not send the dog out 45 degrees off the line where the thing is. Let him get out there. Then you don't give him a cast, an overcast back to the line. I wish people would think about this, the casting I see. The way these dogs are trained, when I point them, okay, we're pointed and they're kind of, they got some picture in their mind, right? They're looking out there at whatever they're looking at going, okay, that's the way I'm going. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to, you know, they might veer off and do dog stuff, but that's what they're thinking right then. So when you send them out and you stop them, you have just told them, okay, I'm going to change your direction. In other words, you said, okay, you're wrong. And I'm going to alter this. So, I'm just trying to think this one out. So you told them you're wrong. So we are going to correct their trajectory to get them back going right at the bird again. You do not stop them. Cast them back to the original line. This makes no sense to them. Back to the original line, and then we're going to give them a back. I mean, they're just going, what? First you said here, now you're saying way over there. That doesn't make any sense in the way a dog thinks. So if they're starting to get slightly off, and again, slightly changes, the more advanced they get, the slighter that slight is in the beginning, you got to give them a little wiggle room here because they're just figuring this stuff out. But you always cast them at the bird. Always cast them at the bird. Always cast them at the bird. That way you are never lying to them. So when you stop and go, oh, you're wrong, and then you give them something that's 90 degrees off of where they were going, what are they supposed to do with that? They're going, I don't know what we're doing. I mean, you can just see their heart sink. You can see dogs that are trained that way. It's etch-a-sketch stuff versus, all right, you're a little off, dude. I'm going to get you right back at it. Go. And then they can get their momentum going again. So make sure that you give literal casts always to the bird. And then make sure if you get them downwind when you get them out there. Tons of practice to this. Tons of practice. This isn't something that's a couple weeks. You know, this is a couple years. It really is. I mean, when you start and you get a dog that can go do some rudimentary stuff, you ought to see him 2 years from then. If you continue to work on it, it's pretty darn good. But what I want to caution people is settling. Don't settle. If you send a dog to me here, you're not really settling type. But don't just kind of fling them out there, stop them, and then kind of fling them to the right and hope they get the bird. Man, that's a waste of dog and a waste of training. Line them up straight. You have to have good obedience for that. Send them where they need to go. When they get a little off, and again, little in the beginning, a little off on a new guy that's just doing this, that might be, I might let him get, I don't know, 10 yards off and then cast him. If it's one of my big shots, I'll get him 10 feet maybe. That's it. So you have to be careful. You have to understand that they're learning this stuff. They're learning this stuff, and this is not natural, and it's hard. So you need to do this stuff many times a week. And if you just stay at it, and some days are going to be horrendous, and some days are going to be, I can't believe this dog is so great. Then right after that is where the dog doesn't go and doesn't, all kind of stuff. It's just all over the map. So it can be awesome and terrible, and it just keep at it and don't change your standards. And with repetition and patience, you can have a fantastic blind running dog and not a crude thing that you kind of send him out in the field and then guess him over there. And you can take dogs that are trained this way that can go run master hunters and do this stuff or whatever hard stuff you like to do. And when you're hunting, and yes, this can happen, and you know that bird landed somewhere in that bunch of stuff over there, then get your dog over to that area, cast them in. It's going to take about two or three times, and they're going to figure out, oh, man, you can still keep your standard when you're training and when you're competing, but you can also function in the real world of hunting. Put them in there, and they're going to figure out, I'm going to dig this sucker out. He's in here somewhere, because you couldn't handle him anyway. Either you can't see him, or you don't know exactly where the bird is. So that stuff works just fine. So let me go to water. But when you can do this kind of handling, then when you're running marks and your dog, is heading for the memory bird, and then all of a sudden just thinks he's going to go back and get the first bird again, as soon as you see in his head that he's doing that, Oh, I'm going to just go over here, tweet, cast them back. If they refuse that cast, tweet Nick. I said, go get that. And you may have to handle them to it. Let me say this. If your dog can handle, this is not like the coolest toy in the world. And so as soon as they're not right exactly where they should be, then you can handle them. Do not do that. That is terrible. That is terrible. I will go over and pop you with my wiffle bat if you do that. Do not do that. So you have a dog, whether you compete or hunt, for the dog to do the work, for the dog to find the birds. And the only way that dogs get good at finding birds is by working at finding birds. And if you have a dog that handles, and so he went 10 feet deep, tweet, and you tweet him in to where it needs to be. You didn't even know. Was he setting up a hunt? Was he overrun it? You got to find out. Find out, does he overrun it? Does he overrun it and come back? You know, I mean, you've got to let these, the greater priority is the dog takes all the responsibility. I got to watch that bird and I got to go find it. So unless the only time he'd handle is if he was just flat out either getting in some kind of trouble, getting into something we shouldn't be in, or just leaving the area, or just completely doesn't have a clue what he's doing, and after 5 minutes has just said, I don't know, I'm coming in, then handle. Be really careful. Don't just have a coolest toy in the world and then use it like that, because then the dog's going to go out there and go, don't see it, turn around and pop and look at you, you know, and go, okay, show me where it is. Don't do that. One, that'll fail you in a competition. And two, that's not why you got the dog. So you want this dog to go find these things for you and have the skills to stay in the area of a fall and hunt it up. And if you start playing with him, you'll get rid of that. So don't do that. And finally, so now we're going to talk about water. Your dog has to have been through swim by. Now I know, you know, somebody's, oh no, my other dog wasn't. He ran all kind of water blinds. Okay, but anyway, so if a dog came from here and they've gone through the swim by, which is where you get the tools, where you teach a dog that you must get in the water when I point you at it. And we don't argue about that. You get in the water and you continue in the water. And if I stop you, you turn around and you tread water. And don't be in a hurry. Don't be in a hurry. You know, I see everybody in the head that they stop the dog and the head spins around. And as soon as the dog's eyeballs cross them, they fling up their arms. And so the dog learns, you just go out there and then do a 360. Blow that whistle and they stop and turn around and look at you. And then mindfully give your cast. The casts in water are not the same as casts on land. All right? They are not the same. These are not etch-a-sketches. So casts, particularly on beginning dogs, and that's going to be more of the people I think that'll be listening to this, casts that you give in the water, are especially on the new guys, are either a get in or get out, a stay in or get out. That's all. In the beginning, they don't have any geometry at all. And if you ever got your eyeballs down in a pond or whatever you're training in, they don't see all the stuff we see. So they're either going to stay in the water or get out of the water. As they get better and better and better, now I can do the trick angle stuff and I can kind of cast them in the direction of the shore, but they won't get out. But in the beginning, they don't know any better, so when you throw any arm up that's on the shore side, they're going to think that they can get out. So you have to learn about that. You have to pay attention. So don't stop your dog on land or water when you're running a blind. Don't stop your dog when they're right dead center on the perfect line. Because then any cast you give is going to send them off of that line. So when you handle, particularly in water, because everybody is slower, and let's say you're doing channel blinds, which is always where you should start, because there's the pitcher. You don't get out. You go to the end of the channel, and that's what I've done with dogs that have been here. Okay, they know there's a channel. I just get in the middle of it. I don't get to tippy toe on the side. Go straight down the middle and either get it at the end or get out and get in and jump back in and swim straight back. So if for any reason your dog is kind of hopeful that dark spot over there is the bird, and so they're moving a little bit over towards the left of this channel, Let them get far enough left that they are off that straight line you want them to go back, so that when you give the cast, the straight up cast, straight up is what you're going to give in a channel kind of a thing, that they're going to go, oh yeah, back to the middle of the channel. But if you stop them dead in the middle of a channel, almost any cast you give is going to be, okay, dead center's not right, so it must be one side or the other. So you got to think a lot about these casts and what the dog is getting out of them. So when you are, if you haven't been a blind runner from a long time, then you need to start with very simple things. Channels are best. There's the picture. Things down at the end. You can eat in the beginning. Let them see you walk down and put the bumper down and come back. Right? And then send them. They have to get in. So start, because if you're new to this, start on the edge. Okay, they have to get in. And if you're that far along, they will get in. And they also have to stop. I would caution you on the water about stopping them just for grins. Because I just don't do that like on land. If they're going on land, if I'm running a blind, not the pattern blinds, if I'm running a cold blind and that dog is going directly at it, I do not stop them. Because when you stop them, you're going wrong direction, I need to change it. And they were going the correct direction. Okay, so no, don't do that. Pattern blinds is where you do that. That's where you practice that stuff because they know where they're going. But on a cold blind, don't stop them until you need to change their direction. Same in the water. Don't stop them unless you, because as soon as they're going dead center down that channel, right? They're just going dead center down it and you stop them. You just said, okay, wrong. Well, now they're going to be looking for someplace to get out because obviously back there isn't where it is. So think about keeping your dog's head thinking the simple things correctly. You can swim across a pond to the other side and back if you don't have channels. Make sure that it's a clear picture. The priority is get in the water when I point you. Stop when I say make your best effort. When I say stay in the water, when I give you any cast that's not towards get out, that means stay in. And there's a whole lot to that stuff, but you need to be aware that, especially in the beginning, it's either a get out or get in or stay in thing to them. And that's all it is. And there is just nothing better than lots and lots of doing water blinds and practicing. Not the same one. Don't do the same cold blinds. Don't go back and repeat cold blinds. I have watched pros, not top shelf pros, you know, they go, oh, we ran that blind last week. Let's do it again. I would almost never do that. I can't say never, because I can think a few times. Don't repeat a cold blind. When you repeat things, okay, fine with the pattern blinds. That's fine. That's why you don't change your pattern blinds. You just have one set of pattern blinds. But you don't repeat cold blinds, because when you do that, you teach them it's okay to go back where you've already been. And maybe you haven't been there for a week or something, but it's okay to go back where you've already been. That is nothing, particularly if you're going to compete, guys, that you ever want to teach these guys. Because then it's okay to go back to an old fall, or it's okay to go back to the blind you already got, or it's okay to try. So cold blinds should be literally that, not done before. And if you do all your blinds in one field, that's not going to work. They have to be in places that they haven't been before, so that they have the newness and the unexpectednesses. If they have memories all over the place and they're going to go, well, it's either going to be the one by the bush or the one by the stump, those aren't cold blinds. So you've got to do, when you're doing cold blinds, you've got to do them in different places. And now on the water, we don't have as much water available as land. I repeat channel blinds with dogs, because like there's a channel, go in the channel. I do it on channels that I have. I'll take a dog that's already a master hunter and go repeat some known channel blinds with him, because to remind them, get in the water, stay in the middle, all the way to the end, come back. I like them thinking that way. Okay, don't do that on the land, because water is a different deal. But you can't just go do the same blinds all the time, because then they'll just know those. You can come back sometimes to those, a channel or something that's conceptual. But you want to, like on land, you still want to have, oh God, what's this? I don't know where I'm going. That's real important. I would say be very cautious, particularly on water. People like to do, especially when they're new to this, the angle. Wow, I saw this angle entry, and they had to go way down and then go along the shore. And then they go along the shore, and then they had to go up over the point and then back. And they got this, and so they want to practice that. So I never practice that stuff. Literally, I never practice that stuff. I have far more practice. This is on my already a master hunter of four time guys, right? I will practice. I will do conceptual stuff. And I have the setup for it. So I can get way back and they have to go through the little rectangular swim by pond. And then they have to go through this little piece of water over here. And it can be 200 yards where they've got to always get in the water. I do a lot of that stuff. Ooh, there you are running at water. You have to get in. I don't do a lot of that real trick stuff because you can get into so much trouble with that. So much trouble. It's like, okay, well, where do I stop them? 3 feet here or there? And then when do I get them? When do I put pressure on them because they aren't getting in or they're not getting out or whatever it is? So I would be very cautious until you are pretty much of an expert to do more than just get in. You know, maybe there's a point. All right, get on it, get off. And then straight back. Real simple stuff. You're going to be better off if your dog has the really important things of get in the water, stay in the water, turn around and tread water when you see me. You know, seek a lot of water because that's what they taught in swim by. And every now and then if I say get out and then get right back in again. You can do really trick hard blinds in competition if your dog has a ton of confidence. If they're going, I can do any water blind. They don't know that hard, tricky stuff where you can get in all kinds of trouble. So they just believe. And that's a much better way to go run a dog in competition. If they really believe and you say, okay, get out. And they're going, okay. And then you say, all right, get back in. They're going, sure. Because they don't have these nightmare memories from the time they really got in trouble for not doing the shoreline over the point angle thing right. So simplicity is always, always better with these guys. And then steadiness. Everybody, dog needs to be steady. Steady means bottoms down. Bottom doesn't move, right? Just down and doesn't move. So on the marks, the way that I do them, and there's varying ways to do this, I bring them up, and unless it's spread real wide, I point them where they're going to go. I let their head look when the other marks go off. There's one over the left, one over the right. They're going to go up. The last bird down is in the middle. They're pointed at the middle, and they watch everything else, and they don't move, and they just focus. That's how they're trained. I know other people like them moving and stuff like that. I don't. I want the least mixed up energy as possible. I want them motionless and watching. And if they get his head swinging, then start doing only singles. And if you put your hand down on a blind and their head's going all over, send them. Just send them. Pretty soon they'll quit that head swinging thing because they always go where your hand is. Send them, and if they go wrong, just handle. That'll get rid of that blind thing, you know. Quit. You can't use your hand like a rudder or anything else. Put your hand down just like on patter blinds and go. So practice the basics first and most of all. Do not be going, oh, look at this dog. I'm going to go out and do it triple and a because one, you're not there. And so, you know, I mean, maybe you're going to be there real shortly, but you're not there. So don't just jump in. Hey, don't jump in. Go back to this real basic stuff and get real comfortable with your dog and get them real comfortable with you. And then when you start doing the harder stuff, it's going to be way less hard than you ever thought because all your tools are present and you two have such a good communication. So that's that one. I don't think I need to do the upland stuff with everybody because it's just like the basic stuff, only when they're really good, they point and they've been well broken. And so there you go. That part all works good. Just keep them in line and let them know what your standards haven't changed. So that's at least some stuff to work on when you take them home. Not all in one day. And I don't care. I know what a lot of people do. Well, we train on Saturdays and Sundays. So my golly, you're going to get everything in. Don't do that. Just don't do that. If you got Saturday and Sunday to do, you know, some marks, good. Then do some, Yeah, do a set of landmarks and a blind on Saturday, and maybe even watermarks and a blind on Sunday. And then, you know, if you have a little bit more time, then, and you guys are training, then do 3 big water blinds. You know, you did landmarks and a blind associated with that. Let's go over here and just do some water blinds so that you get a lot out of what you're doing. And then you don't get a lot, like, you know, you did a real hard set of landmarks and blind, and now let's go hard watermarks and blind. I mean, the dog is like getting overwhelmed with all this stuff. So if you do one thing that's pretty challenging, do something else that's fairly straightforward. Hey, don't do get it all done here at one time. And do a lot of singles. Don't do, you know, oh, look, I got this fancy dog. We can do triples and all this stuff. Don't do that. Make sure that you don't have head swinging and make sure the marking is good. It would be better if you did more singles and set up challenging marks that were singles than if your dog has to count to 2 or 3 all the time. That's just ego stuff. Make sure the fundamentals are always being worked on and that your dog, first, has really good obedience. 2, is a good marker. 3, knows what the rules are, sits and doesn't move, comes directly back to you, goes when you send it on a mark or a blind, stops when you blow the whistle, and does its best to take your cast. They're going to make mistakes. We don't get after them for mistakes. The only place that we're going to do anything is on enforcing steadiness, sit, or indirect pressure when they're kind of getting out of control on a blind or not giving you their best effort. And usually they're more confused than trying to get in trouble. They don't want any trouble at all. So every now and then you got to kind of remind them a little bit. But there should be very little electricity in any of this. Very little to almost none. But don't drop your standards. If you're going, I don't like the collar, I'm not going to use it. And then they get slow sits and they go sideways and it takes 4 casts before you get them there. Okay, that's not good. Don't do that. Don't sacrifice training pressure for your standards like that, right? High standards, do whatever it takes to keep them there. And if you do that, that will be the least amount of collar pressure that you'll have to use. So I hope that's helpful, guys. If there's something I'm missing, let me know and I will see if I can get it back. Meanwhile, do good dog work, folks.